Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I'm Jack Stein, sitting in for Mr. Mike Lewis. Biggest story of the day. We're going to do the five top headlines of the day, but the one that seems as if it's on everybody's mind right now, what everybody's talking about, is some slideshows from the Coca-Cola company. Looks like the Coca-Cola company is accused of racism for telling employees to try to be less white because it is oppressive, arrogant, and ignorant. Now, there's a couple of things going on with this story that need to be kind of teased out a little bit. The Coca-Cola company has come out and they have said, listen, that's not actually part of our official employee training. That is something that is on our LinkedIn page. We're not actually affiliated with it. The slides appear to come from an 11-minute video titled Confronting Racism with Robin DiAngelo. DiAngelo is an author and consultant and argues that even well-meaning white people are complicit in racist structures unless they actively work to be anti-racist. And I have to tell you, I get really tired of this kind of language as a biracial dude. I get really tired of this kind of talk about just that whiteness is this inherent awful bad thing. My mom is a white lady. She's a European lady. I find nothing wrong with someone being white. I find nothing wrong with somebody being black. I find nothing wrong with somebody being Hispanic. I don't think that that makes you intrinsically one way or the other, but there is this new narrative that is out there. That's the new buzzword, I guess, for 2021, 2020, narrative about what it means to be a white individual. And again, as a biracial dude, I find it to be really gross when you have these kinds of seminars that are put out there for people to read, telling them to try to be less white. I mean, could you imagine if somebody wrote a seminar saying, try to be less black? You would say that is the most racist thing that you have ever heard, and you would be right. Now, one of the things about this article that I find really interesting, though, from The Guardian, is they say that the company is being accused of reverse racism. Just so you know, there is no such thing as reverse racism. There is only racism. Reverse racism is kind of a loaded term in and of itself. So Robin DiAngelo, again, an author and consultant, comes out. She has this slideshow, and it says, try to be less white on one of them. And you go, okay, I'm not sure how that's physically possible. And then on the next slide, it says, to be less white is to be less oppressive, be less arrogant, be less certain, be less defensive, be less ignorant, be more humble, listen, believe, break with apathy, and break with white solidarity. Can you imagine anything that is more condescending to a group of people? This is some of the most racist garbage that I've ever read in my life. And I submit to you again that if you flip it in any way, shape, or form, you would find it reprehensible, and rightfully so. I don't understand when we started doing this thing that whiteness was synonymous somehow with some kind of badness or some kind of evil or some kind of intrinsic flaw within you. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. Again, you know, my wife is also a biracial woman. Her father is German and her mom is Filipino. So under this logic that we're going under right now, am I half of what they're claiming I am to be? So to be less white is to be less oppressive, less arrogant, less certain, less defensive, be less ignorant? I mean, it's just astounding to me that someone would even put this on paper in 2021. And think that this was somehow compelling or insightful or somehow philosophically acceptable. It's not. It's disgusting. But someone yet still put it out there. And thankfully, this person came out and they took pictures of the slideshow. So it's kind of interesting to watch and to look at. Again, it is on their LinkedIn page, but the Coca-Cola logo can be seen in the top right of the screenshot. The company has confirmed that it uploaded the video to their LinkedIn learning platform, but insists it's not a part of the company's compulsory curriculum. Here's another slide for you. It says, confronting racism, understanding what it means to be white, challenging what it means to be racist. It is frustrating for me to see this. I wish we could get away from this as a society, because I'll tell you what happens. What ends up happening is that young, impressionable people begin to internalize this kind of nonsense. And I made a YouTube video about it not too long ago about a young man named Ryan McCartan. Ryan McCartan is a Disney star and a Broadway star, and he came out, and he, about 2 weeks ago, he was on TikTok, and someone made a comment about how he had come out and said that he was an oppressor, and so he read that comment, and he went on this diatribe. And we'll just, Shane, if you just want to cue that up, we'll just leave this here for your appreciation. Here's what that sounds like.
Yes, exactly. I am the oppressor. I am racist. Oh my God, he just said he's racist. It shouldn't be this hard, you guys. If you live in America, went to school, participate in the socioeconomic structures, participate in any sort of system, education, business, entertainment, what have you, and you are white, you are indoctrinated, you are oppressive, and yes, you are racist. It is something that we have learned, either consciously or subconsciously, all of us as white Americans. And what we have to do is unlearn that. I'm trying to do the work.
Oh, man. That is a philosophical sickness. He believes that he is racist. I don't think that Ryan McCartan is racist. He's a white guy. I don't think that he is a racist individual just because of the color of his skin. Have you heard of anything more racist than that? That because of the color of your skin, you are somehow attributed this kind of deeper original sin? I mean, it's disgusting. Ugh. I mean, I just want to get away from it as fast as I can. Here's the second half of it. Here's the other part of him just going off, spouting this nonsense.
Part of doing the work is pushing against dangerous narratives that are counterintuitive to that unlearning, like white people are also oppressed by racism. We're not. We are the oppressors. That's the point. You should be doing the unlearning too. Do the work.
I just want to get away from this. I want to go back. I know I say it all the time, but I want to go back to 2012, where we just decided that we were going to treat each other as equals. I don't want to get into this whole oppressor-oppressee narrative. I just want everybody to be treated equal in the United States, but apparently that's not good enough. So the other part of this slide that's going out there, and I think the reason why people are focusing on this as a headline today is because it's so novel, because we haven't seen anything like this before, but also because of how egregious it is, how just egregiously bad it is. Another one of these slides says, in the United States and in other Western nations, white people are socialized to feel that they are inherently superior because they are white. Oh man, I don't know of anybody like that. I don't know of a single person who walks around who's a Caucasian individual and goes, man, I'm so much better than everybody else because I'm Caucasian. Oh wait, you know what? That's not true. When I was a derelict drug addict, I hung around with some seedy characters. And one of the things that I learned, one of the things that I noticed, is that racists, real true blue up and down racists, they love to talk about how bigoted they are. They love to talk about how racist they are. They love to talk about white supremacy. They're like Raiders fans. They can't stop talking about how much they love being part of this group. It's disgusting. And when I was around it, that's what I noticed. They had fetishized their identity. So yeah, you take those guys, sure, they think that way. But the majority of Americans think what? The majority of Americans want everybody to be treated equally. Nobody wants to see anybody get hurt in the United States. I don't think there are very many Americans whatsoever that want to live in some kind of a segregated state. This is all something that's being brought forth to try to put fear into people and make them feel bad for the color of their skin. I can think of nothing more disgusting than that, than trying to convince people that they are wrong just based on the color of their skin. Moving on to the next biggest headline of the week, Mike Brzezinski ripped into Ted Cruz Texas photo op. So we talked about this last week. Ted Cruz went down to Cancun. He made a big political boo-boo, and he decided to go down to Cancun. We did a whole segment about me defending Ted Cruz. If you want to listen to it, you can go back to the Cairo Nights podcast, hour number one on Friday, and you can hear me defending Senator Ted Cruz. But, Mika Brzezinski came out, and she just ripped into Ted Cruz. Here's a quick clip of what that sounds like.
Well, speaking of leadership, Ted Cruz, when his house was freezing, just like the people who died, a woman who was found in her backyard, the man who was found in his house, the little boy who died in his home, Ted Cruz left his freezing house and went to Cancun. And now the senator is seemingly in damage control mode after rushing back and posting photos over the weekend of himself loading water into Texans' cars with the hashtag Texas Strong. Are you kidding me? Many online criticized the move as simply a photo op. Obviously it is. He wasn't planning on being there. He was going to be on the beach with his family. With some pointing out that the senator broke quarantine protocol after traveling international.
So, John Heilman, there's an article that posted in the New York Times this morning, 3 a.m. Headline, can Andrew Cuomo's bullying style still work in politics? And I'm just curious, how bad are things right now for the New York governor?
Pretty bad, Joe. I mean, I think, you know, if you rank them on the scale of are they as bad as they are for Ted Cruz, the answer would probably be no.
See, this is what is so cringy to me about mainstream media, is that there is actually something that we all need to be paying attention to right now, and that is what Governor Andrew Cuomo was allegedly doing in New York. That is a huge, huge deal. Potentially tens of thousands of lives lost because of Governor Andrew Cuomo's orders. But instead, we are upset for Ted Cruz for leaving the state of Texas and not getting photo ops, and then when he comes back, we're upset at him for getting photo ops. It's just not fair. He came back to get photo ops. Why would he do such a thing? I say this again and again and again recently. I do not understand why we need our politicians out there handing out water, handing out blankets, handing out soup. Does it truly make a difference to you? Because if it does, you need to upgrade. You need to get to a different level. Because if that's the kind of thing where you look at a politician and you say, man, wouldn't it be so great if that person was handing out bottled water? You got to really reevaluate your priorities in life. Headline number three, NBC is rushing to exploit the Texas crisis to push radical climate agenda. This is amazing. This is a clip. This is a highlight reel of NBC's Today shows, both Saturday and Sunday, eagerly trying to exploit the deadly weather winter in Texas to push the Biden administration's radical climate agenda. Here is that montage. Here's what that sounded like over the weekend.
There are growing concerns that this unfolding disaster in Texas could be a warning about climate disasters in the future. We want to bring in Gina McCarthy. She is the first ever White House National Climate Advisor, and she was also the EPA Administrator during the Obama administration.
You're right. This is one of those weather events that we shouldn't think of being unpredictable at this point. We are going to be facing these extreme weather events and challenges, and we have to be prepared.
On Paris, of course, the Trump administration had pulled out of the agreement. So can the United States catch up to the aggressive commitments that were set in order to match its initial promises?
America is back.
The U.S. is back in the climate fight, formally re-entering the Paris Agreement to global applause. As the eyes of the world focused on Texas and the devastating failure of its electrical grid, the entire state in a deep freeze, suffering from extreme weather climate change can make more frequent.
So will the disaster of the last week actually bring about change?
It's those fossil fuel plants burning natural gas and coal that are causing climate change, and it's climate change that is causing the extreme weather events leading to things like we saw in Texas this past week.
That was running all weekend long on NBC, just so all weekend long going on with the climate change. Now, I'm not a climate change denier. I just do not know to what extent human beings have contributed to that. But I will say this. Everybody's so excited about the United States rejoining the Paris Climate Accord. Just so excited about it. It is a non-binding resolution, which means that you agree to it, but you don't necessarily have to follow it. As a matter of fact, nothing's going to happen if you don't follow it. You just agree to do it. Non-binding resolution. And you know what the United States was doing? Not 4 years ago, not 5 years ago, following it. We were following it to the best of our ability. We're the only people that met our carbon emissions. The only one out of the entire group. So now we're rejoining the Paris Climate Accord. For what? For what reason? And this was Trump's argument the entire time. We're the only people who are sticking to it. We're the only country who's actually adhering to it. Everybody else is just doing what they want. This is a tremendous waste of time. And I happen to agree with President Trump on that very much. Rejoining the Paris Climate Accord, again, just remember this key phrase. Non-binding resolution. It means nothing to people who don't want to participate in it. And also over the weekend, CBS This Morning host Gayle King and liberal author Michael Eric Dyson, very poetic speaker, if I could say that about Michael Eric Dyson. It was actually this morning. They lamented the big time rise of cancel culture sweeping the media. But the big example that they mentioned was Virginia's Democratic Governor Ralph Northam, who, as you know, or may remember, wore blackface and a KKK costume in decades past. Here's what Gayle King and Michael Eric Dyson were talking about this morning.
But you talk about cancel culture and you talk about the Virginia Governor Northrop. And what was your take on that? I thought it was very interesting because we live in a cancel culture society big time today.
Absolutely. I think the quest for justice is right. I understand the kind of disappointment with the criminal justice system, but I don't think the result and the answer is for us to go around willy-nilly arbitrarily canceling other people. Ralph Northam is the governor of Virginia. When he was a medical student 20-some-odd years ago, he dressed in blackface. Was it wrong? Of course. Was it ridiculous? Yes. Was it nefarious in some instances? Of of course. But my point was, don't cancel him out. Nothing better than a white public official who is conscious of the fact that he owes black people his future because they stand with him regardless of his mistake.
Wow. So now we're going to be using cancel culture actually as like, it's like the, you're going to put a gun to somebody's head basically. And you're going to say, well, if you're not with us, then we're going to pull the trigger on cancel culture. That's amazing. You're going to hold people hostage with the terrible things they did in the past. I actually thought, you know, Shane, I go back and forth on this and maybe you could help me with this. Some days I think to myself, back in the 70s and 80s when people were wearing blackface, they didn't know or they were uneducated about Al Jolson. They didn't know about minstrel shows. Maybe they didn't know the history of it. So they put it on because they thought it was funny. People in 2021 now, we know you do not wear blackface. It is completely gross. But when I see pictures of someone like Ralph Northam when he was in college, do we fault him for that given his the level of naivete that he had at the time? Or do we hold him to the same standard that we would hold somebody in 2021?
I think that you got to give him a little bit of rope to hang himself with in a way, because what he did, I mean, it's not right, but at the same time, times are different, and obviously, you know, he might have done it as like a gag or a bit, which still doesn't constitute it as being right. But at the same time, I kind of agree with what Michael Eric Dyson has to say about the fact that we shouldn't necessarily cancel him because he made a mistake, he's owned up to it and talked about it, and I think now he does have that moral obligation to actually try to do better and try to prevent stuff like that happening and maybe lend a better hand to people of color in different types of communities like that. So I think that, I mean, both ways you look at it, I mean, it's kind of working out.
I would agree with you as well on that. I have heard people come out and they've said that there's nothing wrong with wearing blackface and people should be able to wear blackface. And I always just, it makes me cringe inside when I think about it, particularly what we saw over the summer when there were a slew of YouTubers and people on Instagram who were just getting hammered. They were getting shellacked for these images coming out of them in blackface. And I remember thinking to myself, I am so happy that I didn't wear blackface when I was 17 years old, because that would have just ruined my career. That would have been so bad. But it is an interesting juxtaposition. We should forgive people when they admit that they do something wrong, and I too agree with Michael Eric Dyson on that, in the idea that when someone comes out and says, hey, you know what, I've committed a wrong, I apologize, we should move on from it. We shouldn't continue to do this thing, as we see all too often, where somebody does make a mistake in the public eye and we just keep hammering them on that issue until they eventually just disappear altogether. I'm Jack Stein. I'm sitting in for Mr. Mike Lewis. We have to take a really, really quick break. If you want to find more of my content, you can find my podcast. Human Genius is the name of the podcast. Very easy to find. Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcast. The YouTube channel is also called Human Genius. You have a question for me, you can find my email address there as well. When we get back, Rachel Bell will be coming into the studio and we will be talking about Black History Month. It was a very interesting way to segue through through to that. And then after that, we're going to be doing a little bit of Random Question Robot. We'll take a real quick break. We'll be right back with Rachel Bell after this. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I'm Jack Stein, sitting in for Mr. Mike Lewis. Rachel Bell in the studio. Rachel Bell, I'm excited. It's Black History Month. You have a story about Black History Month. Tell us all about it.
I do. So every April in Seattle is Seattle Restaurant Week. So that's when hundreds of the city's restaurants offer these special three-course menus, usually at a lower price than you would expect to pay. So it's designed to lure new diners into these restaurants. So this week is Black Restaurant Week, which is also a marketing campaign to encourage people to eat in Black-owned restaurants.
So starting Houston 2016, we have a really robust Houston Restaurant Weeks, but a lot of the businesses in our community didn't really fit that model. You know, they don't have like the fine dining three course. And so we just want to create a platform to really showcase and let the businesses in our community kind of shine, just to bring awareness, celebrate the food, the heritage in our community.
So that's one of the Black Restaurant Week's founders, Fallon Farrell. And as you heard, she's in Houston, but other cities around the country heard about it and wanted their own Black Restaurant Week. So now they've expanded to 15 regions and each region gets its own week. So this week is the Pacific Northwest. So it includes the whole state of Washington, all the way up to Alaska, Oregon, all of that. So I checked in with one of the participating restaurants. It's called Alpha's Louisiana Cajun Seasoning and Spices in Kent. It is a very long name of a restaurant, and it's owned by this really, really cool guy named Reginald Robinson. I love him. He opened his deli and store in 2016 because he's from New Orleans and he couldn't find any of the foods or the brands that he was missing from home.
Red beans and rice, greens, po' boys, catfish. We have alligator. We have this stuff called boudin. We have crawfish, and everything in our store is have that Louisiana brand to it. One of our top sellers is Camellia red beans, because, you know, everybody on Mondays, they cook red beans down in Louisiana. That's just a thing they do. Sometimes we even bring blueberry ice cream here. Anywhere up and down the South, Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, your eyes light up and people be like, oh my God, you have Bluebell.
Fallon says because of systemic racism, it can be harder for a Black person to get a bank loan.
The issue in our community is that a lot of businesses are started with people's personal savings, credit cards. Usually when they do get loans, they have higher interest rates. So they just don't have that financial wiggle room to really sustain major hits to a business. And so, you know, a lot of them really weren't able to get the first round of PPP loans. And
but she says that marketing these restaurants through Black Restaurant Week can bring new customers in.
I think last year the average sales increase was about 30%. Most businesses see an increase in their social media following as well. And then when we talk about ongoing business opportunities, people call us all the time. They used to call us all the time about like, hey, we're hosting a food truck festival. Give me your list of Black-owned food trucks, you know? And so it just creates ongoing business opportunities. So the cool thing is we kind of tell businesses, like, welcome to the network, because we're always able to push back out opportunities for you.
So I asked Reginald if he wanted to be identified as a Black-owned business or if he would prefer just to be a business.
Until people realize that, you know, everybody's equal, you may have to do that so we can get attention. But my whole dream is that you just treat Black restaurants just like you would treat another restaurant. People don't believe it, but as Black-owned business, you have to go that extra mile just to prove what other people don't have to go through. And that's my dream and hopes one day that we don't have to do that.
So if you go to mynorthwest.com/Rachel Bell, B-E-L-L-E, I have a link to Black Restaurant Week. This is their first year in Seattle, so they don't have a ton of restaurants on their list, but I also linked to a local Seattle Met article that lists basically all of the favorite Black-owned restaurants in the city. So it is Black History Month. Maybe this month you want to go try a new restaurant on the list.
Rachel Bell, you know, one of the things I just simply do not understand about, let's say, Black History Month or, I don't know, like International Women's Day or something like that, is that I don't mind that there is a month or a day that is assigned to a group or a race. It makes no difference to me whatsoever. But I have found to other people, it's infuriating. Have you ever noticed the amount of people that commentators, pundits, they come out and they say, why do we have Black History Month? Why do we have International Women's Day? And it becomes this really hyper kind of politicized thing, and I don't really quite understand it. To me, it's what difference does it make if a group of people want to celebrate that particular day? What say you, Rachel Bell?
Yes, I have experienced that earlier today when I was on the Tom and Curly show. John Curly
exactly.
Likes to really fight back against these things, and it's really stressful to try to justify it to him. It makes me crazy. But, you know, this is the deal. It's like the reason that there are these days and weeks and months, you know, to celebrate these cultures is because they've been marginalized. And so just like you heard Reginald say, he would love to not in the future be known as this is a Black business. But you kind of have to do that for now because they're not doing as well because they don't have as fair of a chance as a lot of other businesses, people who are not people of color. And I know people are listening going, well, I'm white and I don't have money, or I'm white and it was hard for me to start a business. And that's true. It's not just hard for Black people, but there is this systemic racism. There is this, you know, hundreds of years of a lot of Black people not having the opportunity to make the money as white people did, to have the savings, to be able to get a loan, all of those things. So, you know, for now, this is what we do. And I think, you know, it's happened with women where a lot of women now are saying, I don't want to be known as the best female chef. I am just a chef. That doesn't matter what my gender is. And so once you hit that point, you know, in society and history where it's not needed anymore, then people say we're done. But until the Black community says we're done, keep doing it. Like, you as a white person with privilege do not get to decide when we're done helping these marginalized communities.
Rachel Bell, there are going to be people in the text line that are just going to be begging me. They're going to say, Jack Stein, this is what you rant about all the time. Why aren't you going to be mean to Rachel Bell and rip into Rachel Bell and tell her how wrong she is? I have found, Rachel Bell, that when people use with me, when they talk about, they say, you know, systemic racism is a thing, or they say, you know, privilege is a thing. At this point, I'm much more interested in kind of teasing out how they feel about it for them as an individual, rather than trying to attack this phantom idea of it, if that makes sense. Like, everyone has this kind of phantom idea of what the term white privilege means to them as an individual. Maybe they read it on Facebook or something like that. But I'm much more interested in what people think individually as it applies to them. And I think maybe when we look at something like, I don't know, Black History Month in particular, that's an opportunity for people to have really difficult conversations instead of just doing the whole, let me complain about why we have Black History Month. Let me complain about it. Maybe it's just me, Rachel Bell. Maybe I just like to have those conversations because I find them to be stimulating and interesting. And I don't think that they need to be discarded just because they're racialized or heavy or difficult in that way.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, you know, the more specific you can be, the more personal you can be, the more you can get through to people instead of speaking in these really broad terms, if that's kind of what you're saying.
Yeah.
I think as far as, like, you know, I can just speak for Seattle. You know, most of North Seattle is predominantly white, and then South Seattle is a lot more diverse. And so a lot of people in the North End don't get to the South End to experience the food from a lot of these Black owned businesses, for example, but also a lot of Asian owned businesses, just because, like, they don't feel like driving down there. So I feel like a lot of these businesses do suffer because they don't get all the business, you know, that they could. So I think that this is part of it too, because after George Floyd's death, I did this story on how to raise a child who's not racist. And one of the things that stuck with me was, you know, just expose your kid to all kinds of people. And if you live in a predominantly white neighborhood, leave the neighborhood and go do other things, like, you know, go to a cafe in a more diverse neighborhood, sign your kid up for karate in a more diverse neighborhood, etc. And so that's kind of what I was thinking for this. It's like, maybe just leave your neighborhood, get out of your comfort zone, not because they are Black necessarily, but like, because you should go and check out more diverse neighborhoods. See if you like the food. It's not go there just because they're Black. Go there because you're interested in the food that they are serving, you know? And there's a lot of interesting food in the South End in Seattle that we don't have up north. There's a ton of Ethiopian food, and there's great soul food and all kinds of different places that we don't have. So, you know, do it for food exploration at the very least.
Rachel Bell, you're the best as per usual. We got to take a really quick break. I'm Jack Stein filling in for Mr. Mike Lewis. When we get back, random question robot and a whole lot more coming up after this. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I'm Jack Stein, sitting in for Mr. Mike Lewis. Right around this time, we like to play a game. It's called Random Question Robot. You don't know the rules? Well, guess what? Here's
there
how it goes.
None.
Shane presses a button on the Questatron 700, goes beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop. We spits out a random question. We answer it going counterclockwise from me. I never go first. And I'm ready to begin, Shane, whenever you're ready.
All right, just one second here. Let me get this thing fired up, and let's get this party started. All right, here we go. First question for you, Frank. What do you bring most to a friendship?
A willingness to be really open and honest and to listen very carefully and ask a lot of questions.
Very good answer. Yeah. Jack, what do you got?
Fisticuffs. I'll go fisticuffs anytime. I'm a bit of a pugilist. No, you know what I would say? I am always the guy, if you need a ride, if you need a call about your girlfriend breaking up with you, about your boyfriend breaking up with you, I will put time aside for people, you know, whenever I can. I'm just that dude.
That's a very nice answer. I think I would have to kind of mirror same of the same themes as you guys. I like to consider myself a really good listener. I like to sit down and take time to listen to what people have to say and really try to connect with what they're feeling emotionally and what they might be going through. So I would definitely say that I would be an A1 listener, and I would bring a lot more than that to a friendship, including also some pretty sweet dance moves. I can bring that into a good relationship as well.
Oh, good.
All right.
Shane, I wasn't paying attention to what you were just saying. I just totally spaced out there for a second.
Oh, I'm well, are you back with us, Jack?
I'm back with you.
All right, good, because we got one coming your way right here. All right, Jack, this is a new one. If you were a student at Hogwarts, which house would you most likely fit in?
Probably Hufflepuff. I mean, to be honest, I really would probably be one of the Hufflepuff kids. I'm really not. I'm just such a transparent guy and kind of an effete guy that I just feel like that's where they would put me. I'm not a rough and tumble, you know, casting spells, lightning bolts, shoo kind of guy. I'm really much more of a, hey, let's look at these fun plants over here and let's all, you know, have spells that bring about peace.
All right.
Okay.
Frank, what do you got?
Gryffindor. That's easy.
Frank, like that's a cheap answer. Gryffindor? Come on, Frank.
Gryffindor, thank you.
You wouldn't be a Ravenclaw? You don't think that you'd be what's the other one?
Well,
Slytherin?
Slytherin, no, definitely not be Slytherin. No, I'm going for Gryffindor. Besides, I like the people that's in it.
Oh, that's a pretty good answer, I guess. I think I would have to go Ravenclaw. I mean, they're kind of one of the more unconventional groups. I think they have the best color scheme out of all the houses instead of the red and gold. So, I mean,
why are you laughing? That we're talking about this?
Yeah.
No, that, but also that Shane is the most equipped to answer this question out of everybody here. That Shane is the best. He gives the best answer out of everybody, and he's the most equipped with the lingo out of everybody. And so that tickles me pink that Shane is immediately like, oh, yeah, Ravenclaw, the most unconventional out of the group. Think about it, man, that what they're doing over there, it's dynamic. It's got momentum.
We're starting a whole new thing over there, man. It's going to be the next new craze, dude. That's how it's going to be.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right, let's see what else we got here. All right, this one's coming my way. What would be your dream bathroom? What would it look like? I, myself, am a real big fan of outdoor showers. I would want to be able to have a really nice big walk-in shower, but also have that shower have the ability to go outside. So if I could get the pipes all nice and hot and get some good warm water, imagine taking a really hot shower out when it's like snowing or like it's raining outside. You got the nice warm water against the cool, brisk air. That sounds absolutely lovely to me. Frank, what do you got for your dream bathroom?
I would have a really big jetted tub for sure. I actually I don't like the ones that are like a hot tub. I like the kind that are just almost like a very modernistic but big version of the old, you know, clawfoot tub. But I want it jetted. I like it. I like it nice and deep so I can have lots of water in it.
All right, that's a good answer. Jack, what do you got?
I'm just picturing Frank in the hot tub from Scarface.
Oh, good.
the huge tub.
Smoking a big stick, sitting there with the glass.
That's it.
Just yelling at everybody. I would really like my grandparents when I was a kid. They had a nice stand-up shower in their bedroom, which was on the second story. And they had the kind of shower head faucet that was like a rain shower. And they refused to let us children go in there. Like, it would come out of many different points. It just wasn't one spigot. It was like it was actually raining in the shower. And I would have that if I could have that. And just out of spite, truly, Frank Shires, just because I hated those people so much that now as a 33-year-old man, I could say, now I get to be in the shower and you're dead.
Oh, man. That is tough.
Well, they were terrible people, Frank. Unlike you being the saint of... they should have lived up to your reputation, Frank.
Oh, yes,
Shires.
Sure.
I'm Jack Stein, sitting in for Mr. Mike Lewis. When we get back, Culture Hour coming around. Bands are breaking up. Lots of new memes are coming out there. Culture Hour, 9 o'clock. Stick around. We'll be right back after this.